Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind.
Here I'm still waiting on your theme. What
happened? It's all right. You got me, Michael?
Okay, stand by.
And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Did you miss the theme today? Did you miss it that we started with? Here you are. It's always nice to look at things a little differently. Just a little differently. And today, we're going to look at things a little differently. And of course, here I am talking about love again, and one of the most confusing things that happen to people, which is love and the love relationship. We've had so many ideas about it for so many years. And we've kind of boiled it down to a basic ideal self. And the ideal self is, I have a real me who wants to fall in love with a real you. And will the real me meet the real you, and the two of us will go off into a real sunset holding real hands together. But something struck me the other day, and it has to do with the null hypothesis. The null hypothesis, by definition in psychology, usually means, let's look at the opposite of that and see if the opposite is true. And if the opposite is as true as the original, then maybe we're not proving anything. So it's called the null hypothesis, which has nothing to do with Gary. Maybe it does. But it's called a null hypothesis. But let's look at a null hypothesis, because I think it gives us some a different way of looking at romance and love. And in this case, I want to present the illusion of perfect parenting. And here's what I'd like you to consider, my friends. And if you just tuned in, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. In the studio with me, Linda Vanella today, and also Dr. Jeremy Spiegel, visiting us back, and also a student of psychology, Kenny Barron, and Lauren Sykes, our apprentice here. So we got a full studio today. Kenny Barron's here with us for the first time, but he's a remarkable young man, student at Fordham, psychology student. Good guy. But here's what I'm talking about today. I want you to imagine something that you've never imagined, so attend to this for a minute. Imagine that people select each other not based on trying to find someone who will love you for your true self. Isn't that what you always think? I want somebody who's going to love me for the real me. But instead, we want somebody who's going to love us for our fake self, which is the self that I walk around with most of the time. The fake me. So I'll say it again to you. Imagine that people select each other based on having them love your false image of yourself instead of the real you inside. And that's why people choose each other. Well, let's see if that makes any sense. Let's look at it. Most people choose a role for themselves in life, a way that they will get, or they imagine that they're going to get people to love them. Right? In the drama of The Gifted Child, she talks about how we either are going to be grandiose or depressed. We're going to be one way or another because we want to get somebody to love us. We want that love from childhood. We want that caring. So we choose a way of being. As kids, we learn that our real selves, which may include our angry, our resentful, our jealous, competitive, sad, scared selves, those parts of us are not really acceptable to the people in charge. You know, shut up, kids. Stop crying. Or what do you have to be sad about? And they talk you out of it. So we adapt a way of being that we think will get us what we want. We can become caretakers, for example. We give and we give, hoping that if you take care of the other person enough, you're going to get love in return. Or you can become a performer. You can become somebody who says, I'm going to do a good job. And I'm going to do such a good job that people are going to love me for how good my job is. And I'm going to be an actor or an actress and people will applaud me. Or I'm going to be a singer and people will applaud me. Or I'm going to be just good at my job. I'll be a good secretary or I'll be a good technician. And people will love me for what I am. Or we become leaders. We say, I know what I'll do. In order to get love, I'll command the group. I'll be in charge. And this way the people will admire me for how strong I am. They'll say, oh, what a strong leader he is. We love him for that. And that's the way I'm going to get everybody to love me. Or we become an artist. You know, we could be hoping that we could be loved for our uniqueness. You know, oh, how special an artist you are. You know, that's the thing about artists. They love to be unique. We put any number of styles, personalities, approaches to life, which we become, like you could become a negotiator. You know, you could be somebody who's always there whenever there's trouble. They get in there and they put out the fires. They make sure there's no problems, right? A peacekeeper. But who is the real self? Or who are these selves? Are they real? Or is it just something you're putting on to get somebody to like you? Well, obviously, they're not real because it's the way we perform. They're our adaptation, our presentation, the thing we put out to the world. Let's say that you say to yourself that physical beauty is your bailiwick. Bailiwick, what a good word. Is that, that's your thing. Your strong point, and someone falls in love with your physical beauty. You could be work out in a gym and you get really strong and you get really buff. Or you put tattoos on your body like this past Sunday. We saw so many shirtless people during the parade with tattoos all over their bodies. And this is it now. I'm a tattooed, strong, muscular animal. And that's what I am. I'm strong. Or you could be beautiful as a woman as well. You could be, you know, you could be, look at my long legs, look at my high heels, look at the scent I wear. And beauty, physical beauty, sexuality becomes the thing you sell as a man or a woman. I'm going to sell you my, here I am, I'm a sexy person. Or I'm a good provider, or I'm strong and I can take care of you. Or you could get loved for being so smart. You could be a professor at school, and you say, I'm a professor. And you have some nice young students fall in love with you. And you say, ah, you see? So now who I am is I'm smart, and I could get somebody who is frail, who needs somebody to love me. And I could find her false self, which is looking to be loved by her daddy or by somebody strong. And that false self will be in love with my false self, which is this professor, this smart, this intelligent guy. But what happens to me when she and I go home after we get married and I start showing her that I'm not so strong after all, that I'm a little afraid, that I'm afraid of things? Well, she looked at me. She said, but wait, you're supposed to be the strong daddy. And I said, oh, I don't know. I can't handle things too well. Well, then I got to go find somebody else. I, the professor, got to find somebody else who's going to like me. So I have an affair with somebody else who's young and another student or another student or another student. And I go, you know, and this is the way people get by. Now, this is the positive mind with Armand DeMille. I think there's a very interesting way of looking at this because we came up with a solution. So stay with us. It's not all negative. So time passes, and you're not as beautiful as you were. You used to be beautiful when he met you. Now you got wrinkles. So what do? You get implants. You work out in the gym. You put on creams. It doesn't work anymore, right? He doesn't love you, so what do you become a cougar? You go, I'll go find some young guys. Young guys love older women, right? I'll go find that, and this way they'll still love my beauty. It'll still be my imagination. Or as a man, you do the same thing. And you begin, over time, to show yourself. Now you go to a shrink and you go to a therapist. One of the ways, the best ways for a man to lose his mate is to send her to a therapist. Because here's what the therapist is going to do. The therapist, and I'm one of them, is going to say to you, you have to show your real self to your mate. But you see, your mate doesn't want to see your real self. Your mate doesn't want to see your rage. He doesn't want to see your sadness. He doesn't want to see your frailty. He wants to see the pretty little nice person, strong, ideal, intelligent person. That's what he wants to see. But the therapist says, no, you must, for the sake of your own integrity, show your real self. So then an amazing number of people who are in therapy have their husbands starting affairs while they are in therapy. Why does that happen? Because the husband is looking for another false self somewhere else. He doesn't want this real self. So then the therapist says, no, the two of you have got to become real. Here's the challenge. So now you have to become real and they have to become real. This is Armand DeMille. If you just tuned in, this is Radical Thinking, the Null Hypothesis. Nothing I definitely believe, but it is an interesting approach to looking at relationships. And I, of course, could argue the other side. I've got my good friend in the studio, Jeremy Spiegel. Jeremy says to me, you know, Armand, I don't know how to talk without presenting the other side of this as well. And I said, I fully understand, because if you were saying this, I would want to be on the other side. But let's consider it from this side. Let's look from this side of the picture, that nobody wants anybody to be really real. Now, of course, there's an assumption here that there is a real self. And I'm not sure there is a real self. All I know is there are feelings that you have that you don't normally show. And I'll call those real feelings. And maybe you shouldn't show them in the first place. Maybe the big mistake is trying to shove them down somebody's throat and try to say, you have to accept me for what I am. I remember once I had a good friend. In fact, he's one of my best friends now. And I was telling him I was very sad about something. And I told him I was very sad. We were both psychology trainees. And I told him I was very sad. And he kind of said, yeah. He said, well, why don't we go fishing? And I said to him, Bill, when I present to you my feelings, why don't you honor them? And he said to me, just because you give me a box, and in this box are your beautiful feelings, he said, do I have to accept it? How callous of him, right? But really, the truth is, do we have to accept the other person's real negative, sour feelings? Well, okay. So then I have another friend who learned how to nod in appreciation whenever anybody is saying anything negative to her. She nods with this understanding. You're talking directly about her. You know, I'm angry at you or something. And they nod and has this appreciation. And this appreciation, behind this appreciation, it looks like she's understanding. She's not. She's distancing herself. She's saying, oh, you're such a schmo. But she learns how to nod. And therapists learn how to do that too. You go to a therapist, tell the therapist you're angry at the therapist. Watch the therapist's response. Therapist goes, really? Oh, really? And they have this understanding compassion. But not necessarily a true feeling. And that's okay. Now, Linda asked me a very important question before. She said, could it be that people present their fake self, their adaptive self to somebody, and that the person who falls in love with them is their fake self? It's my fake self loving your fake self. I need to look strong. You need to look beautiful. Therefore, I want you to admire me, and you want me to be attracted to you. See? And now this is a collaborative relationship. It kind of goes together. I'll be attracted to you, and you'll find me strong or intelligent. Then my real self says to you, you know, I got scared. And you go, wait a minute, it's not so strong, right? That's not so strong. I heard a story about a woman who talked about her husband. She said, I was out with my husband, and my husband had an asthma attack, childhood asthma. And she said this to her daughter. She said, I couldn't believe that he had an asthma attack because I thought he was so strong, and it turned out he was really weak. People sometimes see illness as frailty and weakness, and it goes completely away from the illusion that you're strong. Something that happens sometimes with people when they get sick as they get older. They have a mate. The mate thinks they're a champion. They're wonderful. And then they get sick, and they have suddenly, you know, they're laying around with some kind of physical problem. And the mate says, oh, my God, where is that person? I didn't sign on for this. And they want out, and they get out, even though it looks like they're not getting out. So if it isn't, you know, and by the way, I know you people are going to want to call in about this one. And so you could be after 1:30 or so at 212-209-2900. You could dial in and speak to us. So we're talking about this difference of what it is that you present that attracts another person, and then they fall in love with you, and then they fall in love with you, and your true self stays hidden, the true feelings about yourself. Because for many people I know, their true self feels unfit for human consumption. You know, they say, you know, if you really knew how weak I was, if you know how scattered I was, if you knew how stupid I felt, you wouldn't want me. So let me pick up your socks for you. Let me give to you. Let me offer you the best experience, because you wouldn't want me otherwise. Okay. It's an interesting deal. The only way you get loved, for example, is to be mommy's little boy. So a lot of young men, they find women and they say, I'll be your little boy. I'll do whatever you say. I'll admire you. And then the mamas look down and say, as long as you're a good boy and as long as you behave, as long as you're not an upstart. And a relationship is built like that. It's the same as a man loving his little girl. If there's a girl who wants to be daddy's little girl, she plays daddy's little girl. So what's so dramatic about this is that you work at being more real with your partner. The more you work at being real with your partner, according to this hypothesis, the more they fall out of love with you. The more real you become, the less loving they are. Holy cow. That's not the way it's supposed to be. The way it's supposed to be is the more real I become, the more you love me. No. The more real you become, the less I love you. Who wants your real self? I want that other self I married. How many times do you hear guys complaining about that? Why did she change? When I met her, she was so wonderful, and then she changed. She didn't change. She just unfolded. She just showed you other parts of herself. Because there's somebody telling her she has to be real with you. You know, or even for you. Why did you unfold about yourself? You know, she didn't expect your sloppy T-shirts with eggs on them. You know what I mean? She didn't expect you to be some kind of a, now I'm married. I can afford to drink beer and watch sports all day long. She didn't expect that was going to be her hero. So you hear people talking about change, mates changing over time. They say, I want the one I married. Well, they're telling the truth. They do want the one they married. They want that original image you. What right do we have to demand that they accept this other you? What right? What right do we have? So, I want you to see how I want to show you the me. No, I want to show you the me that you like. That's the way I want to live. I would like all couples to always present to the other person the me they would like. Let me show you the me you'd like. And let me not show you the me you're not going to like so much. So if I got to show somebody the me, I'm going to show it to my therapist. I'll show it to my brother or sister. But I'm not going to show you the me that I know you're not going to like, because I want to keep you. Jeremy, he's biting. He's at the...
I can't help it. I'm sorry. I can't help it. What if you like that me that you project, say, that the other is so enamored with? Maybe you like that about yourself or those aspects of yourself that you want to maintain that.
Sure. Sure. So you maintain your strength. That really you don't like the crying, soppy you.
Exactly. And that you, in fact, you might even go out of your way to present this self, as you're calling it, to your partner and to yourself at once. You can both benefit, both enjoy this, what you're calling the false self. So you can ignore the other aspects.
Well, okay, that's if we're assuming. Let's say we're assuming that you have a choice over it. But maybe you don't. Maybe you don't have a choice. Maybe your automatic self is just your automatic self. Maybe you've even inherited from childhood. Maybe it's in your genes. You know, maybe it's not a choice. Maybe if you like this other self, you shouldn't be liking it. Like, I don't like myself being a somebody who's in charge of a lot of things, who controls things. I don't like that part of myself, even though I like that part of myself. I like it, but I don't like it. I would rather be more at ease not controlling. You would rather be more at ease not serving. You would rather be different.
It speaks to how we're not unilateral, monolithic beings. We are so many things all at once. And, of course, there's going to be this, what sounds like a paradox on the surface of it, what you just presented, is not paradoxical when we are considering we're talking about human beings. Because there is not a single one of us that does not have so many facets to our personality. Forget personality, that's a long-standing thing. How about just a mood state? How about how I am this afternoon? How many aspects are there to how I am this afternoon? There could be so many different sides to this. We are so shaped by how this patterns that we fall into. You're talking about relationships that are long-standing. I wanted the person that I met, and who is that person? Where is that person now? Well, we all fall into patterns, and we often fall into patterns that are unanticipated to ourselves. And so we didn't know that we would be the ones dropping socks left and right on various living room floors as we got older in various relationships. But that's us. That's me now. You know, why am I doing this? And, you know, of course, we're also...
Well, I want to be careful not to go too far afield from this.
Yeah.
Because if you... I want to go back to the original point of this. The point of it is there is a self, whether it's real or not, that we present. And we want to be loved for that self, not for the real self. It is not a desire to find an inner self that is going to unfold to you. No, I want you to love me for who I present to you. And therefore, I cannot expect, or I can, or I've been trying to get you to see that there are other parts of me, but you didn't sign on for that deal. You didn't sign on for the vulnerable, honest me. You signed out for the devious me. You signed on for the part of me that was going to flatter you and take care of you and all that stuff. So here's where the question comes in. What do we do with each other? Is it doomed? Maybe it's not about the real self. Maybe it's about the wounded self. And maybe the wounded self does not throw itself at the door of your mate. Give you an example of this, PMS. In PMS, I've found so often somebody with PMS, they will be fine in the entire world. They'll be fine at work. They'll be fine everywhere. And they go home to their mates. They show all of the bad stuff, right? I'm angry, I'm disappointed, you, right? It's all that kind of stuff. Why? Why does this go to the mate? Because the therapist say you want the mate to accept that this is the real you. But what you're saying, Jeremy, is no, this is a feeling you have at the moment. Maybe you shouldn't be bringing that home. Or maybe by bringing it home, what you're doing is you're encouraging that partner to say, I no longer love you. Because maybe it's our way of chasing the love away. So that the fake me stays with the fake you, you know? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Look at our divorce rate, 50%, right? At least divorce. Look at male menopause. Look at what happens with midlife crisis. Look at what happens to women after menopause. Look at relationships with younger men and relationships with younger children, you know, with younger women as well, not younger children. Look at all that stuff. Why is that all going on? Well, I think the idea of the real self got in the way. Here's an image I had the other day. We like to blame the other guy. So imagine you're cleaning a window. And you're going to decide, okay, we're going to clean this window from both sides. You stand outside, I'll stand inside, and you both clean the window. And you clean the window, and they clean the window, and you stand back, and you say, there's still a spot over there. So you go over to the window and you look at the spot and it looks like it's on their side. So you tap with your finger on the window, tap, 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 right? And they hear this on the window and you say, it's on your side. And so they wipe on that side, but it doesn't go away. So they tap, tap, tap on your side and you say, oh, it's on my side. So you wipe and it does go away. And you say to yourself, gee, I was so sure that it was a smudge on your side. I was so sure it was your fault. But you know, after you wipe it off and you find that it's on your foot, you never apologize. You don't say, gee, I'm sorry. I thought that was yours. You just make believe. You just go away and you say, all right, we'll never mention that one again. Well, that's what people do with each other. They blame each other for the smudge. But really, it's on our side. And maybe the biggest mistake here is that we are expecting to be loved for something that we don't even love ourselves for. You know, if you can't love yourself for being sad, or if you can't love yourself for being scared, why are you asking somebody else to love yourself for that? You know it's not a lovable trait. So bring it to a therapist, bring it to a friend, but maybe protect your mate. Now, this is radical thinking, my friends. This is not something I believe in. It's a speculation. And what I would love to do is hear back from you on the basis of what you've heard. And we'll do that right after our break today, because we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk more about this. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. And when we get back, I want to talk with you about this whole idea of who is it that got married? Who is it that formed the relationship? Do we ever want a real self to exist? Where did this whole concept of a real self come up? Who made this one up? I don't know. So when we get back, my friends, and just to let you know, if you need a copy of today's recording or any of the past recordings, we've been getting a lot of requests lately, you can go to the Positive Mind, WBAI.org, carries the archives for a short period of time. But then after that, you could find that archive at www.thepositivemind.com. Does anybody still say www? You don't need to, right? You could eliminate that. ThePositiveMind.com. If you can't respond today, you could respond by email. We'll be checking emails during the program. That's Armand@ThePositiveMind.com. We'll be right back. of Anatole Garalmy. The name of the song, Self Extractor, which I thought was appropriate for our work today. Self Extractor. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind in the studio with Kenny Barron, Lauren Sykes, Jeremy Spiegel, and Linda Vanilla. We're looking at this null hypothesis, this idea that maybe we don't want to be loved for our real selves, but we want to be loved for our fake selves. Think about you. Think about the self that you want to be loved for. I want somebody to love me for my tenderness, yet I always present my strong side. Now let's say that you decide that you want somebody to get off a position of theirs. Let's say somebody's mad at you for something you did, or somebody's distant from you. What do you do when they are distant from you? Now, what that means is they withdrew from their regular self into an inner world. And they're in this inner world where you can't touch them. They're behind a steel wall. You've seen that happen. It happens to every couple. You know, they look depressed or they look withdrawn. So what do you usually do to get through that wall? Well, the therapist will tell you, tell them what you really feel. That never works. You go to somebody who's withdrawn behind a steel wall and you say, you know, that really hurt my feelings when you did so and so. That wall doesn't change one bit. However, what does work? Rage works. You get really mad at them and you scream at them and eventually they scream back and they come out of their cave. Or abandonment works. You walk out on them. That works, and then they maybe change their mind. They wake up and they say, oops, he left. I better open my eyes. Or then pain works too. You could be in tremendous physical pain if you fall down and break your leg suddenly. They say, oh, what's the matter with you? You know, so on and so forth. But truth rarely works. When somebody is hidden behind a wall, really telling them about it, how it hurts, it doesn't work, even though that's what we, the therapists, will encourage you to do. This is why when a person's grows, they eventually have to leave their partner. Because when you grow, when you get to be somebody who is less your artificial self and more of, well, you become more honest. Your partner doesn't want that. So they don't love you anymore, and you don't love them as much anymore either. You know, it all kind of changes. So, my friends, we're going to take your calls. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hi, you're there. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi there.
This is Tom. And I just wanted to comment on the program and the topic.
Good, Tom. Thank you.
I had two thoughts that kind of come to mind, and I just wanted to rename the two selves that you're talking about, just because that works for me. And one I feel like is a projected self, and one is the shadow self.
Good. Okay, well, let's do that. Let's take that.
And I feel that you can lose your... They can both be authentic selves, and that you could lose yourself in either self. One can be dominant at one time, one could be dominant at another time. And sometimes the environment or the situation calls for one self or another self. It depends on, obviously, safety, a variety of circumstances that can dictate which self becomes more dominant. And it's something that...
Well, so Tom, let me ask you something. Great, because I know the concept you're working with. Let me ask you a question. You have been your projected self in relationships, right?
Certainly.
Right. Now, what happens when your shadow self emerges? Is the other person really so happy to see it?
No. I mean, I think that there are triggers, and sometimes it's discomfort that brings around the shadow self.
Okay, but let's say your shadow self now emerges, right? And you try to bring it to your partner. How successful has that been over life? Have you stayed in relationships for a long period of time working through the shadow self?
No.
No, it doesn't work. That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is what you and I are both agreeing on is, let's say we have these two aspects. The shadow self is really very private. We should keep it to ourselves or tell our mother about it, but we should not be telling our maid about it. We shouldn't even tell our mother, actually. That's not safe. You should probably tell your sister or brother or some good close friend.
Yeah, some people intuitively understand your shadow self. Some people actually only choose to really engage that self also. So it
well, that's a different story. Now, that's when the shadow self becomes another projected self. If somebody chooses to only relate to your shadow self, well, you know, then that's the self that they're related to. Then they never want to see a better than shadow self. It gets very complicated.
It does. I just wanted to share that because I think that they're both valid and they're both authentic, and I don't know that one really always weighs out to the other. I think
I agree with you.
Environment dictates, you know, comfort levels between people. I think that there's a lot there.
Sure. Now, Tom, keep in mind, I am presenting a null hypothesis. I, of course, agree with all objections to this theory.
Right.
But I think yours is a very... It's not even an objection. It's a good clarification, and I appreciate what you have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure. Now, there's a place that people go to that, you know, I'm going to ask you about this, Linda, because I know it has to do with yoga. You know, when a person is caught and they're trapped in this, they have an inner self that wants to come out, but they know that it doesn't belong with the other person. What's the yoga understanding of that?
Well, Amand, it's that place of what I call the inner sanctum, that tiny minuscule, that second or two, that hole that I use when I'm working with people, that hole between the exhale and the next inhale. And it's that deep part of us. It's the part of defense, of hold, of perhaps some recluse, where we go when oftentimes we feel beside ourselves, that hum place, that I understand place. Rather than I'm out of here, I'll go to my familiar place. It's a place of denial sometimes. It could be a bit of anguish. It could be somewhat despair. But it's certainly a familiar place. It's that deep
and you
inside.
Said something real important there. You said it's rather than I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. The I'm out of here is always, always running in the other direction because you can't handle the direction you're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
You said something before to me. I said to you, you know, when a person becomes under stress, they tend to organize. You remember, Jeremy,
yes.
What your response
yes.
was?
Yeah.
You know, when a person's under stress, they tend to become compulsive. They tend to become obsessive. They just want to organize. But what Jeremy said
is that they would want to flee.
They want to get out.
Yeah.
You want to organize so you could run away is what you want to do. So the biggest thing in relationships that we always have to deal with is somebody wants to run away all the time. And what you're saying, Linda, is that you teach people to find this spot inside themselves through yoga or however we teach it so that they don't have to run. Hopefully they can center themselves, but it's not always so wise to just bring it out and say, oh, I found it. Now let me go tell my husband about it.
For sure. It's, again, that fight or flight. And I guess I would see it almost as a fight, you know, getting into that inner sanctum place.
Is a place to is a
place
courage.
Of, yes.
Hmm, interesting. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
Hi, this is Roger.
Hello, Roger.
I think you have a really interesting show today.
And isn't it fascinating?
It is.
I mean, whoever talks like this, I mean, only WBAI would allow this.
Yeah, it's a great station. And look, I you know, what you were talking about today sort of reminded me of Irvin Goffman's book. Goffman's book on presentation of self in everyday life. And his notion here is that, you know, the self is something negotiated. You might think you're putting forward a particular kind of self, but the person reads it in a certain way. You're not totally responsible for what you put forward. And actually, you know, my belief is that there is no innate self. The self is always constructed by your, you know, your social surroundings, your family, your community, people who you deal with. That's who constructs yourself, and it's constantly being constructed. I think the point you made before about if you don't change over time and your mate changes, you're going to have a problem. I think the notion of a self is something that is in constant change. And if it's not changing to keep up with the times or different circumstances,
but
Roger, you're in trouble.
Roger, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Don't you have a basic self that you present? Aren't you a compassionate guy? I mean, don't people see
there
compassion?
There are qualities, yeah, there are qualities.
Don't they see
that
you're an understanding, warm-hearted man?
Yeah, but not under all circumstances.
But if you were to meet somebody, like if you were to meet somebody who you're going to be intimate with,
right?
What do you present?
I think I do present that Mr. Sensitivity.
Mr. Sensitivity, right? That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is, when you find a mate, and then I'm Mr. Sensitivity, and then the two of you get together, and now it's a few months later, and you say, you know, I'm so sensitive that I also have some pain, where I think about myself, not just about you. And so then you bring that real self to them. I'm saying, yeah, but they didn't sign on for that.
They signed on for your
being sensitive to them.
Yeah, but I don't see it that way. I see that pain is part of Mr. Sensitivity as well. I mean, it's all integrated for me. And I, you know, if they don't see it, if I can't reveal it to them, there's something wrong with me and not being able to show them. If they run away, they're placing me in a little box.
Okay, well then how about this? How about Mr. Strong?
Okay.
How about if you're Mr. Sensitive, what about Mr. Angry? Do you ever get angry?
Of course I do.
Yeah.
So you're allowed to show that in different situations.
You're allowed to show that to your mate as well.
I should be, shouldn't
I? You've done a lot of work on yourself, haven't you?
A bit, yeah.
Yeah, I hear. Thank you, Roger.
But I really think, you know, Armand, I really think the issue of the self is something that you don't totally control. It's something that you're given, in a way.
Sure. I agree.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. And I especially agree when you think about the Sufi concept of it, or the Enneagram, when you think about it. You know, it's like we kind of import it the whole way. We kind of bring it in with us sometimes. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I didn't get to hear the other calls because I had my radio off.
That's good. Thank you for turning the radio off. You don't need the other callers. You're the only important one. But thank you for standing by like that, because we ask you to turn the radio down. What's your name?
Avi.
Avi. A-V-I?
Yeah.
Nice name. Avi, hi. Tell me about, well, Roger's a nice name also, and so is Tom, so I don't want to show a particular preference for names, or I'll get letters. Avi, tell me about you. What do you think about this concept?
But this is the problem I was having. I got very emotional when you were talking about couples who are good with each other. I mean, show only the fun side, the good side, because my parents were like that, and there wasn't a lot of dealing with the ugly, like the real parts of life in our...
You mean the painful part of life, because we don't know if that's any more real than the other parts. They weren't too good at dealing with the pain of life.
Well, I grew up on a kibbutz, and when there was a holiday season, there were tourist guests coming, and everybody would put on a facade. And when people would leave, the adults would all be smoking pot and doing their thing, their sexual thing. And the kids were kind of left to their own. And there was a lot of peer pressure amongst the kids, and a lot of bullying, and a lot of, there was a lot of bullying. And there wasn't a lot of... Things were covered up. When people did hurtful things to other people, they covered it up. And I'm getting very emotional.
That's okay, Avi. Avi, so you must have felt tremendously alone. You must have felt so alone because there was no place you could turn. We were smoking pot, we were having sex, we were having a good time. And meanwhile, Avi's getting picked on by the other bullies. And you're turning around and saying, Mommy, Daddy, where are you? But you get so lost, especially on a kibbutz, you know, where there's a shared parenting. It's like, It's like you scream out, not this is my real self, but please see my pain. Now, that's what you wanted from your parents.
Well, but part of the problem, I was not the one who was bullied. I was part of the, there was a group of girls, and we were pressured to be, the older girl, to be part of the group, we were bulimic. And I'm still dealing with that issue, although some of them grew out of it. But we bullied another guy. We would call him Gingy because he was frail and had red hair. And he didn't quite make it. So I wasn't the one really being bullied. I was quiet, or I bullied, or I
participated. Well, you see, Avi, in a way you're saying you were bullied. In a way you're saying you were pressured.
Yes.
Into being a bully, which is a form of bullydom all its own.
Yes.
But I'm not just trying to excuse you. So there's a part of you, Avi, that has great trouble taking love in. There's a part of you that even if love came your way, you would want to bring it in, but there's a part of you that rejects all offers, isn't there?
Well, that's the bulimia. I'm in a 12-step, and that's the first thing they tell us.
They tell you what?
That it's the bulimia is about not accepting the love and rejecting.
That's right. It's exactly right, because it's giving it back.
But when I opened up, I have a boyfriend. I'm not married, I'm kind of young, but I was hiding it from my boyfriend. And then after when I got in the 12th step, when I opened up to my boyfriend, it surprised me. He surprised me. I thought he would be angry, or because I was lying to him, like, about things and about hiding my food problem. But when I opened up to him, at first he was angry that so much lying and so many excuses. And but then he on his own called me back, and it's really made us closer.
Wow, how wonderful. How wonderful for you. I'm glad you have that in your life right now. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I can see you still have the pain. When you said the redheaded guy that you bullied didn't make it, what do you mean? You mean he died?
Yeah, he killed himself a while back. He didn't make it I moved. My grandmother had me move to another place. She didn't want me at that kibbutz.
Avi, let me ask you something. There's a part of you that feels responsible for his death somewhat?
Of course.
Of course not. You feel responsible for his suicide because there's a part of you that believes that you joined in a bullying thing that made this guy feel so unraveled that he killed himself. And that's, you carry that pain with you?
Yes.
Oh, you poor kid. It's not what I know about people who commit suicide. I don't see people who I know who commit suicide to be the result of some kind of bullying by their peers, by the women and their peers who made fun of them. It happened long before that. Because if he had a solid relationship with his own family, this would have never happened to him.
But on the kibbutz, none of us did. We were left to ourselves, almost.
Yeah, it's a kind of a strange system, but, you know, there's still a solid feeling that you could have with your family. I know people who grew up on kibbutzes who felt very close to their parents. So it's just there are certain few who just didn't do it. And I would say the blame has to go more towards what the guy didn't get from the rest of his life than to you, Avi. But if you're carrying this in your spirit, you're going to have to talk to somebody about this further, because I could hear it. It's a cloud in your soul, you know, I hear it.
Yes.
I don't want that to exist. How old are you now?
20.
Yeah, I thought so. This is not your fault. Avi, it's not your fault. Hey, Avi, if you ever want to get past this, give me a call.
Okay.
All right, because this could just interfere.
Okay.
And you sound like you're too beautiful a person to let something like this interfere with the rest of your life.
You mean beyond the 12th step?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, although that'll be of help too, but I can see that it's not, It's not just being addressed completely. Okay, Avi.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for being so brave as to be on the air. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. I don't know if we're going to have time for another caller. So this is the hypothesis today. The hypothesis, the idea, is to consider for a moment that everybody who loves you for the part of you that you present, not for who you really are. And by that I mean not for all those other things that you carry around that you don't present. So that when you put them out there and suddenly you resent, oh, you're not really loving the real me, forget it. Forget it. I think the idea here is keep your stuff to yourself, you know, and try to work through it. And don't load it on someone else, and certainly don't ask them to be responsible for it. Don't ask them to carry the responsibility of your pain. It's just an idea. It's a consideration. I would love to hear from you about this. So if you would, my friends, send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com, and I will, and what will I do? I'll read them. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.